Welcome, everybody. Today is Monday night, June 1st, and we are here for part four of our series, Arguing with God. Today's topic is God and Avimelech. This series is sponsored by the Grzebinski family in honor of the memory of Dawn Grzebinski, David's sister. And we're very grateful for the Grzebinski family for sponsoring this series.
What we're going to see, the Avimelech story is when Abraham tells Avimelech that Sarah is his sister and not his wife, and Avimelech takes her. But what we're going to see in the text is some interesting differences, and perhaps it's a lucky mistake. We're going to see some interesting differences between how the conversation and argument went between God and Abraham, and how the conversation goes between God and Avimelech. And as we go through the story, you could take note of some of those interesting distinctions. We could try to figure out why, in fact, they're there, and what they can teach us, and why they're important. Okay, so. Let's first remind ourselves of Abraham's argument when God tells him that he is going to destroy Sodom. Larry, do you have a question? You can unmute yourself if you have a question. I see your hand is up. Go ahead, Larry.
No, let's come back to it at the end, okay? I don't want to get you off track yet.
Okay, so we see Abraham's argument when God threatens to destroy Sodom. The essence of his argument is Vayigash Abraham Vayomar Ha'af Tispet Sadik Im Rasha. Abraham turns to God and says, "Will you sweep away the innocent along with the guilty?" Right. That was the gist of Abraham's argument, and then Abraham entered into the bargaining with God to see if there were fewer and fewer tzaddikim, fewer and fewer innocent or righteous people in the city, that then God would in fact save them. In the end, Abraham, as we noted last time, is only partially successful. Now we come to Avimelech's argument. Let's just read the story. I want to look at the sheet this way. We have the English. Okay. Vayisa Misham Avraham Arza Hanegev Vayesha ben Kardeshu ben Shur Vayagar Bigrar. So Avraham travels, he ends up in Grar. Vayomer Avraham al Sarah Ishto Achotihi Vayishlach Avimelech Melech Girar Vayikachet Sarah. Avraham said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. So King Avimelech of Gerar had Sarah brought to him. Vayavo Elohim El Avimelech Bachalom Halaila. Now we get to the crux of the interchange between them. God comes to Avimelech in a dream at night. Vayomer lo, and he said to him, Hincha meit al ha'isha asher lakachta. You are going to die because of the woman that you took. V'hi be'ulat bal. She is a married woman. Okay? Now, obviously, this comes as a surprise to Avimelech because Abraham told him that Sarah was his sister. V'Avimelech lo karav eleha. The Torah tells us that Avimelech did not approach her, meaning did not abuse her in any way. And then says, Vayomer Adonai, Hagoy Gam Tzadik Taharog. O Lord, will you slay people even though innocent? Which to me is somewhat reminiscent of Avraham's argument, where Avraham says up here, I put them both in purple to indicate that they are of the same theme and they're similar. Ha'af Tispet Tzadik Im Rasha. Right? Avimelech uses the same words, the same word to describe the innocent people, the same language that Abraham uses. I don't think this is accidental. I'm not suggesting that there was a better word to use, but these stories are very close to each other in the text, right? One is chapter 18, one is chapter 20. They have a similar similarity in the sense that there's a discussion or an argument with God. And so this word tzaddik, I think there, when we read it, is supposed to sort of catch our attention to realize that we've had this before. Where have we had this before? We've had this before in chapter 18 when Abraham confronts God about destroying Sodom. Ha'af tispe tzaddik im rasha. Will you also destroy the innocent with the guilty? And Avimelech saying, Hagoy gam tzaddik tarom. Will you slay a people even though they are innocent? What's interesting here, though, is that there is an important distinction, and I will ask if anyone wants to suggest what it is. There's a very important distinction between Avraham's argument on behalf of Sodom and Avimelech's argument on behalf of his people in terms of the way that Avraham refers to the people and the way that Avimelech refers to the people. Anyone want to venture a guess as to what that distinction is? Very important, I think, in the context of what's going on here. So I'll put the question differently. Avraham, up here in chapter 18, admits to something that Avimelech does not admit to.
Guilt.
Who said that? Who said guilt?
Neda.
Neda's correct. Meaning Avraham admits that there are guilty people in Sodom. Ha'af tispe tzaddikim rasha. Will you sweep away the innocent along with the guilty? There are some guilty people in Sodom. But Avimelech's argument is more powerful. Avimelech says, Vayomer Adonai hagoy gam tzaddik tarom. Are you going to slay a people even though they are innocent? Meaning, I think they're all innocent. Right? No one did anything wrong here. There's two arguments here. In Abraham's argument against God, Abraham is saying, okay, there are guilty people, but what's with the collective punishment, right? Why is everyone being punished for the sins of a few people? That's not fair. Avimelech is saying two arguments, not only one. He's saying, first of all, no one is guilty, and therefore no one deserves to be punishment. So this is from the perspective of Avimelech, what God is suggesting to do is to destroy an entire people for, even though nobody has sinned, while in the case of Abraham, God's going to destroy an entire city because a few people have sinned. So Avimelech's claim is very strong. There's also another interesting assumption that Avimelech makes about God's declaration. Let's look at verse 3 again. Vayavol him Avimelech b'chalom halayla, vayomer lo hincha meit al ha'isha asher lakachta. You are going to die because of the woman that you took. And Avimelech says, you're going to destroy a whole nation, a whole people, even though they're innocent? What did God threaten to do? Anyone, you could unmute yourself. For some reason I can't unmute you. Anyone unmute themselves? What did God threaten to do in verse 3?
Kill
who?
Avimelech.
Avimelech. What does Avimelech say in verse 4?
People.
Right, that's very interesting. Unclear to me why that is. Right, in verse 3, God threatens to kill Avimelech. You are going to die over what you did to Sarah. And in verse number 4, Avimelech says, you're going to kill everybody, even though nobody's guilty? He didn't come to his own defense. He came to the defense of the whole, of his entire nation, even though God hadn't said anything about his entire nation. So it could be that when God says, Hincha meit, you are going to die, that Avimelech understood that to mean everybody. You mean the royal you, because you represent the people, and nobody stood up against you, and nobody said, don't do anything. they're all guilty. But that again is, that would be collective punishment for something that only one person did. So in that sense, we can understand Avimelech's argument as being similar to Avraham's. Avraham again says, there are some people who are guilty, you shouldn't kill everyone. Avimelech, in the second understanding, could be saying to God, even if you think I'm guilty, which I'm not, you're going to kill everyone else too? I mean, they certainly didn't do anything. Again, unless being an innocent bystander and not stopping Avimelech is what God is considering to be problematic. Okay, you have to unmute yourself, Mom, because I can't do it. I can't unmute you either for some reason.
Oh, now I'm unmuted. Okay. Work now. Okay. I don't know what I did, but it worked.
Did you have a question?
No, I just want to talk to you.
Okay. Okay, so I'm muting again. Okay. So that's just, again, the similarities and differences between Avraham's claim and Avimelech's claim. Let's continue reading. Halo hu amar li achotihi, v'hi gam hi amra achihu, v'tam levavi uvenikayon kapai asiti zot. Avimelech says, hold on, God, listen here. Now Avimelech had not approached her. And he said to God, he himself sinned. Now we're in verse 5. Avimelech said to me, meaning Avimelech is saying that Avraham, he himself said to me, she is my sister. And not only that, and she also said, he is my brother. When I did this, my heart was blameless and my hands were clean. Meaning Avimelech is saying to God, not only didn't I do anything, but the fact that I just took her into my palace was based on the information that Avraham and Sarah themselves gave to me. Now, I have a question on this verse, but before we get to it, I want to look at a midrash which expands Avraham's argument. But actually, before we do that, I want to go back to Hagoyim Gam Tzadik Tarum. When Avimelech says, are you going to slay people even though they are innocent? The rabbis here expand, and this is sort of, again, our theme, that the rabbis not only approve of this type of discussion or argument with God, but here they even expand it. So there's a couple of really interesting midrashim here. If we remember last week when we learned about Avraham, said to God, this is, let me just number the sources. Sorry about that. So source number 6 over here. But God, Avraham said, Chalilalach, right? Don't do this thing. It would be terrible. God forbid. Far be it from thee. Chulid hulach. It is a profanation. Yomru kachu umanuto. People are going to say, this is how God operates. Shotef hakol. He destroys everyone. Sadikim urishaim. The righteous and the wicked alike. Kachasita ledor ha-mabul, u ledor ha-palaga. He did this in the generation of the flood and to the dispersal of the nations. That was Abraham's argument, meaning Abraham says to God, don't do this. I'm going to be your image agent, your public relations agent. Don't do this, because if you do, people are going to start saying that this is what you do. You're just an unfair person. Not person, you don't fear God, and you just destroy the righteous with the wicked. The Midrash Rabbah, quoted by Rashi, says puts the same argument in the mouth of Avimelech. This is in source number 5. Hagoy gam tzadik taharog, af im hu tzadik tahargenu. Even though it is righteous, will you slay it? Shema kach darkecha. Maybe this is your usual way, la'abed ha'umot chinam, to destroy nations for no cause. Kach asit l'dor ha'mabul, u'l'dor ha'palaga. This is what you did to the generation of the flood and the generation of dispersal. Af ani omer shaharagtem alo davar, kemo sha'ata omer lahargeni. I have no choice now, God, But to think that you destroyed, now he adds a layer. I have no choice, Abimelech says to God, to believe that you destroyed the people during Noah and you destroyed the people during the dispersal for no reason, because you're about to destroy me for no reason. I'm going to assume that you've also destroyed them for no reason. So this is a whole new level, a whole new layer of argumentation. Not only, so what's going on here? Not only is Abimelech saying, I'm innocent, like Adam said, and Cain, or at least Cain said, don't punish me this way, but Adam said, I didn't, it's not my fault, and Avraham tried to save the entire people. Abimelech is saying, not only am I innocent, but I'm going to assume that all the destructive activity that you've engaged in until now has also been meted out on innocent people. I'm going to learn from this situation that your past, that I can't trust what you did in the past either. So the rabbis here expand the level of argumentation. He's not only arguing for himself, for his own merit, he's learning from his situation to judge God on past situations. He borrows the language that Abraham used, but he adds a layer. Abraham just said, people are going to talk bad about you. The assumption that Abraham made is, I know that you're not unfair. But that's what people are going to say. Abimelech is saying, I think you're unfair because I know that I'm innocent. And therefore, I have to assume that so was the generation of the flood and so was the generation of the dispersal. So that raises the stakes a little bit in terms of Abimelech's level of argumentation against God. That's the first point I wanted to make. On this, and then we see another midrash where there is this expansion of what Abimelech said. Right, Abimelech said that Avraham told me that she was his sister, and Sarah told me that she was his sister. And there's a midrash. Oh, maybe I didn't. Here's the midrash. Davar Acher, this is source number 7. This is from the Psikta Rabati. Davar Acher Hagoy Gam Tzadik Amar Im Goy Taharog Gam Tzadik Taharog Im Ho Rega Tal Avimelech Harug Et Afla Avraham. This is, again, what's interesting about this is that this is another time that the rabbis put into the mouth of Avimelech an escalation. We already saw he escalated it by saying that I'm assuming, God, that all of your acts of destruction in the past have been unfair because what you're about to do to me. And now he says, okay, and I'll tell you one more thing. If you're going to kill me, you have to kill Avraham. This is not my fault, right? So this is, again, another layer. Avimelech lays blame on God's chosen one. Right, he lays blame on Abimelech. Why should he? Lays blame on Abraham. Why should he blame Abraham? Im horei gatal Abimelech harug af laAbraham. Lama Amara barachi hakoein berebi. Sha'alti oto mahi ishtecha. I asked Abraham, says Abimelech, is she your wife? Amar achotihi. He said, no, she's my sister. Chazarti v'sha'alti ota. I turned around, or again, I asked Sarah. I asked the woman, Omeret lav ela achoto ani. She said, no, I'm his sister. Afal pikein sha'alti livnei beito. And then I even asked the members of his household, the amru achotohu, and they told me that she is his sister. Halohu amarli achotihi, v'hi gamhi amra achihu. Everyone told me that she's the sister. Why are you going to kill me? This is Avram's fault. Now, this is not, this is a veiled, but not so veiled, sort of a critique of Avraham by the rabbis. Instead of coming and critiquing Avraham outright, the rabbis put this critique in Avimelech's mouth. But really, I think it's them critiquing Avraham for lying. And we know that the later commentaries, the Rishonim, most notably the Ramban, took this approach and said that Avraham made a mistake, a sin. I'm sorry, I think the language that the Ramban uses is that he sinned in these situations when he lied about Sarah, and this could be an early source for it, even though again it's couched in a critique by Avimelech. But it, just in terms of our discussion, the critique here is an escalation. Not only is he claiming innocence, he's saying if anyone's guilty, Avraham's guilty. Okay. So I want to stop here and see if anyone has any comments or questions before we move on to sort of the next stage. Again, for some reason, you have to unmute yourself. If you have a comment or a question, I'm unable to do it, but you all are. Any comments or questions so far? Okay, so let's continue. Oh, Jesse Schiff. Jesse, you have to unmute yourself. Oh, hold on. I got you, Jesse. Go ahead.
I just wanted to point out that there is one thing from Avraham and on, there was a go-to argument. It's about the reputation of God. If you do this, what will people think of you? It's about Sdom, it's Avimelech, it's Moshe when he comes down from Har Sinai and God tells him, hey, move to the side and I'll kill them, everybody, and I'll leave you and I'll start from scratch with you. And he says to them, what are you thinking? I mean, what will the nation say about you? So this is kind of when they... It's different than Adam and Cain, that they were arguing about themselves. Here we have a bigger argument. Like, look, and it's very strange thinking that this should influence God. I mean, he doesn't know the reputation that might
come
with his actions. So.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting point, that there's a trend, although we're going to see Avimelech, in fact, goes back to the sort of more basic argument as well. But you're right, in the Midrashim, for sure, there is this. Although it's interesting, Yossi, I think it's an interesting point that it's only made explicit in the Torah later. Here we see this reputation argument being described in the Midrashim, not explicitly, while later it does become explicit when Moshe talks about it with God. So that's an interesting move. You wonder if the rabbis are projecting what became explicit in Moshe's mouth into Avimelech's mouth and into Avraham's mouth, meaning those earlier stories. I wonder if that's sort of what motivated them to use that same argumentation in the Midrashim.
It's a very strong argument. They thought that this is something, that's a winning one. So they kind of projected.
Right, so it could be, right, it's a winning argument. And to your question of, don't we think that God would either know about this or not care about this? I think it's more than that. I think the rabbis agree with you. I think the rabbis certainly said, you know, God doesn't need to be convinced from these arguments. But it could be that the rabbis are sort of embedding an educational idea in these midrashim, meaning when religion is perceived to be random and unfair and meaningless, then people are going to abandon it. And that could be the sort of hidden message in Midrashim, which would be a very bold thing for the rabbis to say that stories like this could leave people with a crisis of faith. But that's really what, that's exactly what's going on here. I don't know what just happened to my source. I just moved it by accident. That's exactly what's going on here, is that Avimelech is saying, I'm just going to assume that you are a person who does things for no reason, and you're unfair, and that moves people from God. So it could be that the rabbis are doing that. Yeah, thank you. That's a really interesting point. Okay, we see two more points. Larry Jefferson, I need you to unmute yourself. Okay, Larry, go ahead.
Yeah, but when Moshe uses it, it doesn't totally work. He has to back it up with "Remember your promises." It wasn't a total trump card even for Moshe, right? And then the other one was Hashem, Hashem, right? So when he used it, it wasn't the ultimate trump.
Good, and it doesn't work 100% here either, and it doesn't work 100% with Abraham. So also interesting, right? Thank you. All right, we got good. We got a lot of people asking questions. Yossi, I'm assuming you're done, so I'm lowering your hand. Larry, I'm lowering your hand. Irv, you need to unmute yourself.
Okay. Doesn't Avimelech have a unique circumstance in that he, as opposed to everyone else, he actually has the facts on his side?
Yes, excellent. Yes, I'm going to get – okay, let's talk about that now. I see Chana – you have your hand up. Just hold your question, because Irv's question is good and is a segue to the next point, which is, so just to review, we've seen that Avimelech in two ways escalates the argument. One is he says, hey, if you're going to blame anyone, blame Avraham. Your guy is the one who started all of this trouble. And he says, I'm going to assume that all of your past missions of destruction have all been unfair and have all been unfounded, because I know that I'm innocent, which goes to your point, Irv. I know that I'm innocent, and therefore I'm assuming that Sodom was innocent, and I'm going to assume that the Dor HaFlaga was innocent. Really questioning God's entire resume. So in the chutzpah meter, Avimelech is really, really, getting up there. And now we come to Ur's point, which is Avimelech, from the psukim, seems to have the facts on his side. We have an explicit pasuk that tells us that Avraham told him that Sarah was his sister, and a midrash which even expands it. We have another pasuk where God even seems to admit it. So let's look at these pasukim. Let's look at pasuk 5. Pasuk 5 and 6 really created a problem for the Mefarshim. Pasuk 5. Halohu amar li achotihi. Right, Melech says, he himself said to me, she is my sister. V'hi gam hi amra achihu. And she also told me that she was his sister. Bitam levavi, uvenikyon kapai asitizot. I have acted with blameless. When I did this, my heart was blameless and my hands were clean. Okay, my heart was blameless and my hands were clean. And then God says in 6, Vayomer elav Elohim, God says to him, Bachalom, in a dream. And by the way, this is the second time he comes to him in a dream. He comes to him in a dream in verse 3 and a dream in verse 6. It's unclear if it's the same dream or not. Anyway, he says in a dream, Gam anochi adati, I know, ki betam levavecha asita zot. I know that you came with a blameless heart. You did this with a blameless heart. Ve'echsach gam anochi otcha mechatoli, and I kept you from sinning. Al kem lo natatticha lingoa eloha. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. So there's a lot going on in these psukim. First of all, how many claims does Avimelech make? I did some color coding, so we'd be be able to do this better. How many claims does Abimelech make? He makes two claims.
Oh, okay.
Right? He makes two claims. Bitam levavi, I was blameless in my heart. Uvenikyon kapai, and my hands were clean. How many admissions of those claims does God make? Or acceptance? How many acceptance of those claims does God make?
One.
One.
Blameless.
Right? The color coding gives it away. Vayom re'elav Elohim b'chalom gam anochi yadati ki betam levavecha asita zot. So what happened to Nikyon Kapai? God says, yes, I know, you do this with a blameless heart. What about with clean hands? What happened to that claim of Abimelech? So this goes to your point, Irv. Abimelech has all the facts on his side, but doesn't seem like God accepts all of the facts at face value. And what I'm suggesting here is that in this argument between God and Abimelech, we have a different response from God. God fights back here. When Avraham argues with God, God doesn't argue on the facts. God doesn't say, well, no, I'm not going, there's another reason why I'm destroying Sodom. God says, okay, if it meets the standards that you're setting, fine. God doesn't argue on the facts that Adam brings to him. God doesn't argue on the facts that Cain brings to him. But here, right, maybe God is getting wise to how this whole argumentation thing goes, and he fights back. And he says, no, Abimelech, I am sorry. I accept that your heart was blameless, but your hands were not clean. Meaning God accuses Abimelech of in some way abusing Sarah. That's unclear what, but that's certainly the way Chazal understood it. Because if we look at a midrash here, the midrash says as follows. This is the Yalkut Shimoni. The midrash here in source number 8. Betam levavi uvnikyon kapai asiti zot. Abimelech says, God, I did this with a clean heart and with a blameless heart and with clean hands. God says, no. Amar le, God said to him, Emet be'echad.
One truth.
One truth. Tom yeshlach lecha. You have a blameless heart. Nikayon kapayin ein lecha. But your hands are not clean. Mimash yeshivu gam. Anochi yadati ki betam levavcha asit hazot, hada amra mishmush yadayim hayasham. From the fact that God says, I accept your innocence of heart, but not the notion of clean hands, this means mishmush yadayim hayasham. There was some contact between Abimelech and Sarah. So this is really interesting. It's true that Avraham and Sarah both told Abimelech that Sarah was Abraham's sister. And it's true that whatever Abimelech did, he did with a blameless heart, because she said, everyone told him she was a sister, and those are the rules of the day. That's the way the society operated. But don't tell me, God says, that you didn't touch her, that your hands are clean, because they are not. So it's true, in this case, more than others, the facts are presented on the part of the arguer. But what's also true, what we see something new here, is that God now starts to fight back, which we haven't seen before. Okay, that was another sort of main point. I want to. Okay, Chana, you need to unmute yourself, and then please go ahead and ask your question. I think Chana hung up instead of unmuted herself. Okay, Yaffa? Yaffa, do you want to say something?
Yes. Maybe I missed something, but why all this conversation and arguing about you said that you are his sister. I didn't know. I didn't do it with Tom Lev. And so he was interested with Sarah.
Well, he took her. He took her into his palace. Vayavo Elohi, Vayishlach Avimelech, Pasuk Bet. Vayishlach Avimelech, Melech Gerar, Vayikach et Sarah.
So he did.
He took her, yeah.
He did the same with Rivka.
Yeah, this repeats itself. Right. Yeah. Okay. Mom, you need to unmute yourself.
Oh, now I could unmute myself. I was trying the whole time and I wasn't able to. You have to push some. Anyhow, but wouldn't he have more waylay because it was his sister and not his wife?
It was his wife.
Yeah, no, but he didn't know that. Avimelech
right, that's his claim. His claim is, I'm innocent. I thought it was his sister.
Exactly. Didn't he have more leeway as a sister than as a wife?
Who would have more leeway?
Avimelech.
Right, that's his point. He's saying, I thought she was a sister. But God is saying, okay, but don't tell me that you didn't touch her, because you did. That's why God only accepts the argument of Bitam Livavi. Whatever I've done with a blameless heart. But God does not accept in the green Uvenikion Kapai. He does not accept that his hands are clean because his hands are not clean. Now you could say maybe his hands are clean because she was only a sister. But this conversation seems to be going on the acceptance that Avimelech did, at this point, Avimelech did something wrong. You have to unmute yourself.
Okay. All right. No, because you keep me. I keep going in and out. Okay. There's something wrong, obviously, on my end, because I was muted at one point and unmuted and muted again. So it doesn't matter. I just want to clear up the fact that Avimelech was not innocent because he took a woman, but it wasn't his wife.
Right. Correct. That's what he said. Right. Okay. All right. So. Let's move on. A couple of other interesting things that are going on here. So the Midrash, which we saw where God fights back. And now we come to another new and unique aspect of this story that has not existed in any of the other argumentation stories that we saw. So first of all, we see in Pasuk Vav, in verse 6, Vayomer Elav Elohim Bachalom Gam Anochi Yadati. I knew that you did this with a blameless heart. Ve'echsoch Gam Anochi Otach Mechatonu. Here, two new elements are introduced into these argumentation stories. One, the element that God tells the arguer that he knows that the person, he knows everything that the person did, right? In the other statements, in the other arguments, we don't have that said explicitly. And perhaps more interesting is here we have the first time where God says, I stopped you from sinning. That's why this whole discussion and this whole back and forth in Avimelech and God is very complex. Because in the end, it's really unclear what God is upset about. On the one hand, God says, I do not think you have clean hands. But in the very next verse, he says, I stopped you from sinning. So did he sin or did he not sin? If he did not sin, why does God not accept his clean hands argument? And if he did sin, why does God say, I stopped you from sinning? So there's some degree of ambiguity going on here in terms of exactly what Avimelech did. Okay, now there's a really interesting
another interesting difference between Avraham's argument and Avimelech's argument. Think about the way Avraham went about his argument, as opposed to the way Avraham went about his argument. Can you think of a major difference in their style of argumentation? This is just straight out of the Pesukim. No mefarshim, no commentary necessary. Anyone want to take a stab at that? An important distinction between the two types of argumentation. Something that Avraham does, but Avimelech does not do. Okay, so I will refresh your memory. In source number 3, multiple times. Oh, Larry. Okay, Larry, unmute yourself.
He said, "I'm nothing."
Right, more than once. Exactly.
One word.
Multiple times when Avraham argues with God, he says, "Who am I? I brought you the texts here in source number 3." Vayan Avraham vayomar hine nahu alti v'daber el Adonai v'anuchi afar v'efer. Who am I to speak to you? Right here I venture to speak to the Lord. I who am but dust and ashes. Vayomer al na yichar la Adonai v'adonai. Don't be angry at me. Vayomer hine nahu alti v'daber el Adonai. I venture again to speak to you. Vayomer al na yichar la Adonai v'adabra chapam. Do not be angry at me if I speak one more time. We don't see any of that at all in Avimelech. Now, we didn't see it with Adam and Cain either, but we don't see it here. And I think there's actually a similarity between, well, one of these doesn't fit, right? If we would take the arguments of Avraham, of Adam, Cain, Avraham and Avimelech, one of them is an outlier. And it could explain what's going on here. Which one of those is an outlier and why? Adam, Cain, Avraham, and Avimelech. Okay, Jillian, you need to unmute yourself and then please.
Can you go ahead?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it seems to me that neither of them had shown any respect to Hashem. Only Avraham did.
Okay.
And Avimelech did not show respect to Hashem.
Okay, good. That is a distinction. So how would that explain, though, why Avraham... So you're saying Noach, Cain, and Avimelech were disrespectful, and Avraham is the only one who shows respect. Okay, why?
And Cain, you are right. Avimelech were guilty. There was nothing that Avraham was guilty of.
Okay, good. So now we're getting somewhere.
They were defending themselves.
Ah, right. So you have
aggressive and disrespectful.
Right. You have successfully identified the outlier. The outlier is Avraham. In the case of Adam and Cain and Avimelech, they are themselves on trial, so to speak. Like they are going to suffer if they are found guilty. They're going to be kicked out of Gan Eden. They're going to suffer all sorts of punishments. But Avraham had no dog in the hunt, personally, so to speak, right? Avraham was arguing on someone else's behalf. So it could be that that's why when it comes to Adam and Cain and Avimelech, there is none of the groveling. they see themselves as being treated unjustly, and they go right after it without saying, I'm not worthy, without saying I'm dust and ashes. Avram, on the other hand, you know, maybe he feels like he has to be a little bit more circumspect because, you know, he is not, again, himself. This is not an issue of self-interest. And as we mentioned last week, that he does not lower the stakes. He does not say, well, maybe what if there's only one righteous person? Or because maybe that would have made it too obvious that he was trying to help Lot, who was a family member, and that would have been too personal. So Abraham doesn't get personal. And this is actually suggested by Rabbi Yuval Shurlo in his book, In This Image, where he talks about this. He says, we do not see Avimelech requesting permission to make such arguments. Ostensibly, this is because he is not on the outside observing the events. He is not a defense attorney like Abraham, who challenged God's moral behavior. Rather, he is the injured party himself. The injured party need not ask permission to argue with the one who has wronged him. He bursts forth with moral claims and argues against what he perceived as unworthy conduct. So none of the sort of groveling on the part of Avimelech. Julian, did you have something else you wanted to add?
Sorry, can I say something else?
Sure.
I don't know if it's an American expression or not, to say the best form of defense is attack.
Yeah.
So right. Awesome. Themselves, they were attacking Hashem, they were attacking Abraham. Cain was attacking. I'm thinking of even with Adam. Adam attacked Hashem to say, you know, you brought me this woman and she led me astray. In other words, all these people that did things they shouldn't have done, but instead of defending themselves or being and groveling, they attacked Hashem.
Interesting, but Avimelech does both. He blames Avraham, and he says, I didn't do anything wrong.
And Sarah, yeah.
Right, excellent. Okay. I just want to now turn to another sort of argument where God argues back against Avimelech. It says in verse 7, V'ata hashev eshet ha'ish ki navihu, return this man's wife, for he is a prophet. V'yit palel ba'adcha, he's going to pray for you. V'chyeh v'im eincha meshiv da ki mot tamutata v'chol asherach, he will pray for you to save your life. If you fail to restore her, know that you shall die, you and all that are yours. And the Gemara here raises a question, right? God says, return the man's wife since he is a prophet, which sounds very strange. And the Gemara picks up on it and says, V'ata hashev eshet ha'ish ki navihu, return the man's wife because he is a prophet. Eshet navihu ditidar delo navi lo teadar. Is it the wife of a prophet that is returned and the wife of one who's not a prophet is not returned? Let's say this was just some person and wasn't Avraham. Just because Avraham was a prophet, Avimelech has to release Sarah. And if Avraham wasn't a prophet, he wouldn't have to release Sarah, the Gemara asks. Rather, the Gemara answers as follows. Rather, the explanation is as Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani said, as Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani says, that Rav Yochanan says, this is what God is saying to him now. And now restore the man's wife. In any case, I mean, return her. Read the pasuk as follows. V'ata hashev eshet ta'ish. Period. Return this woman. Return the woman. And as for that which you said, will you even slay a righteous nation? Didn't he say to me, she is my sister? Meaning, Avimelech then says, okay, if I return her, how do I know that you're still not going to kill me? So God says he is a prophet, and it is from you. Oh, sorry. So Avimelech says, will you even slay the righteous nation? Didn't he say to me, she is my sister, claiming that you are a victim of circumstances beyond your control? God says to him, you're blaming everyone else. God is fighting back here, in the words of the rabbis. I don't accept that, Abimelech. This is partially your fault because of the situation you set up in your town. He is a prophet, and it is from you that he learned to conduct himself in that manner. With regard to a stranger who comes to the city, one asks him about matters of eating and drinking, whether he is hungry or thirsty. Does one ask him, is that your wife? Is that your sister? Avram understood from his line of questioning that you are suspect with regard to abducting women. So again, here, God fights back. It says, Avram's a Navi, meaning, Navi here seems to mean something else, means he figured this out on his own. As soon as you started asking the question, this is your wife, this is your sister, Avram got wind that this is a strange question to ask someone who shows up. When someone shows up and they need a place to stay, you say, what can I get you? You need a place to sleep. You need something to eat. When you start asking questions about the women, the people are going to get suspicious that you have specific intentions about those women. So that's why Avraham said that she was his sister. And that's why Sarah said that she was his sister. They learned from you. So again, you're not totally blameless in this whole story. So again, another situation where God fights back and does not fully accept Avimelech's claims of complete innocence. Okay, so on the bottom, I just listed a couple of the unique aspects of this interchange. One, God reveals that he knows man's heart, which we had not seen before, that God revealed that he knew whether the arguer did anything or didn't do anything. Number two, God stands in to stop people from sinning. That's also something new in this one. Again, raising the ambiguity. On the one hand, God says, this is partially your fault. You took her, but God stops him, perhaps admitting that Avimelech is not as guilty as we would think he was at the beginning. Conditional pardon, right? If you return Sarah, then I'm going to forgive you. If you don't, you're going to die. We haven't seen a conditional pardon before. So here again, the indication that God did not fully accept Avimelech's arguments, only partially. Number four, a human being involved in redemption of the sinner, right? Avraham, is going to pray. In all the other cases, it's all divine. Whatever happens is based on the arguer and God. Here, another person is going to get involved in the situation. And finally, Avimelech, and this we didn't point out yet, Avimelech is not quote-unquote Jewish, right? Avimelech is not part of the covenant of the Milah, of the Brit Milah. And he's not part of Avraham's household. He's not the chosen household. And which is also new. Obviously, neither was Adam and neither was Cain, because there was no chosen household at that point. But Avraham was. And Avimelech is not. And nonetheless, he is permitted to argue, again, this very straightforward way to God. I'll read again from Rav Shurlov. On the other hand, the fact that it is man standing before God does not mean that all his words are meaningless, that there is no place for his arguments. In Avimelech's case, there is significant weight to the fact that the disputant is not part of God's covenant and did not undergo the covenant of circumcision. There is significance in the fact that Avimelech's argument is a moral one. Will that also slay the righteous nation, and his argument is accepted? Ultimately, despite the fact that he is told, thou art a dead man, Avimelech does not die. And later he is even rewarded by a covenant with Avraham's offspring. We'll read that later. But the point that I want to focus on is the fact that Avimelech is not part of the covenant with God that Avraham was, and nonetheless, the permission is given for him to argue. And not only that, you see here how Avimelech expands the type of arguments. He expands the arguments to blame someone else, which we haven't seen before, and he expands the argument to say to God, I'm going to assume that everything you've done until now has been unethical because what you're about to do to me is unethical, which is a very high level, sort of, in terms of what we said, the chutzpah level of someone's argumentation, and God does not get angry. God disagrees with the facts. But once again, we do not see a situation where God says, stop it. I don't want to hear from you anymore. The closest thing we get to that is with Avraham, where Avraham sort of walks away and he realizes that he has nothing else to say. But God, in this case, does not stop Abimelech at all from arguing, even in the very direct way that he does. So that is the parasha of Avraham, of God and Abimelech. Once again, sorry we didn't do Moshe today. Next week we'll do Moshe and Yonah. Maybe we'll try to squeeze in a twofer. Thank you for joining, everybody. Any last comments or questions before we say Laila Tov? Nope, no last comments or questions. All right, in that case, again, I will thank you all for joining. It's always wonderful to see you. Oh, wait, Irv. Irv, you need to unmute yourself.
On points two, one and four, let me do point four first. Isn't there a medrash that talks about Adam Arishon runs into Cain, and he says to Cain, where are you coming from? He said, I'm coming from speaking to God. And he says, Venis Pasharti.
Yeah.
Cut a deal. Isn't that
yes.
essentially what point four is? So there is
no, a my point is a different human. A different human. That was Cain making his own deal with God. This is Avraham involved in Abimelech's redemption.
Okay. Second question. The other question is on God knowing man's heart. How is that different from by the Dor HaMabul where God says Ki Yetzer HaAdam Ra Minu Rav?
Again, I'm unclear. God reveals that to the person here, but he doesn't reveal that to them in the Dor HaMabul. Here, God says it. Gam Anochi Adati. I know that you were Betam Levavacha. While in the Dor HaMabul, God doesn't directly address the people. So God is sort of revealing more of himself to this quote-unquote sinner here than he has in the past. Irv, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. No, those are the questions I had.
Okay, great. Okay, Yoshe Kalach, everyone. Thank you again for joining. And look forward to seeing you next week. This was number three. This is number four. I'm sorry. This was number four. I didn't even do this right. This is number four. Next week is number five. We're supposed to do next week. I guess, like I said, we'll do a twofer between Moshe and Aaron, so as not to shortchange anyone. Sorry for the confusion again. Thanks for joining. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening.
Cool.